Elizabeth Dorothea Cole Bowen was the author of 10 novels, over 100 short stories, one children's book, and countless reviews and magazine articles. Bowen was born in Dublin in 1899 to Anglo-Irish parents and spent the summers of her childhood at Bowen's Court in County Cork and the winters in her family home of Herbert Place in Dublin. In 1906, Bowen's mother, Florence, was advised to move away from her husband, who had suffered a nervous breakdown, so she and Bowen moved to England, settling on the south coast in Hythe. After her mother's death in 1913, Bowen went to live with her aunt in Harpenden and then attended Down House, a boarding school in Kent. Bowen married Alan Cameron in 1923. He was an education administrator who, at that time, worked for Northamptonshire County Council, then Oxford, and later for the BBC. When they lived in Oxford, Bowen became part of a literary circle, which included, among others, Virginia Woolf, T.S. Eliot, Graham Greene, Rosamund Leeman, and Rose Macaulay. On her father's death in 1930, Bowen inherited Bowen's Court and then spent much of her time in both England and Ireland. She worked as an ARP, Air Raid Precaution Warden, in London during the Second World War and also provided reports to the British government on the neutrality of Ireland. After the end of the war, she travelled extensively, spending long periods in America, either working for the British Council or lecturing at a number of universities. In 1948, she was made Companion of the British Empire and was also awarded honorary doctorates from Trinity College Dublin and Oxford. She died in 1973. Elizabeth Bowen's The Death of the Heart was published in 1938 and chronicles heroine Portia Quain's loss of innocence and coming of age. Bowen referred to the work as a pre-war novel, set in the time between World War I and World War II, and characterised it as a reflection of British society's growing tensions and anxieties in the days before World War II. Unfortunately, we were unable to get permission from the publisher to use the original recording of the audiobook of Death of the Heart, so the excerpts you will hear are read by our lovely volunteer reader, Claire Millins. So without further ado, Debbie Heath and I are in the studio and we're going to be chatting about The Death of the Heart by Elizabeth Bowen. Welcome, Debbie.
Hello, lovely to be here again.
So we have another novel, an audio book that we both listened to last month called Death of the Heart. And I think having spoken to you earlier, This wasn't necessarily a book we absolutely adored.
No, which is so unusual for us, isn't it? I mean, just because it didn't appeal to us doesn't mean it won't appeal to our listeners. So here we are talking about it anyway. And I found it interesting. We chose it because, despite being very well read and studying literature to a very high level, neither of us had read any Elizabeth Bowen before. I hadn't even heard of her. I'm embarrassed about that.
Neither of us heard of her, and she'd written a lot. I mean, she's got 10 novels and very well known in literary circles. But again, like you, I had never heard of her. This is her best known work, probably her most celebrated novel. I struggled with it. I felt it was so detailed, so immensely detailed. It was like listening to somebody talk who would go on and on and on and then say the same thing in a different way.
Yes.
And then say that same thing again. And I found it quite
so laboured, wasn't it?
Laboured is a good word, yeah.
And it seems to be, at least in the first third of the novel, just a lot of, no, not women, not just women, but mainly women, with the occasional man thrown in, just gossiping about people and situations. There's very little direct action. It's all people talking about things that have happened or their views on other people. And it's very hard to find anything to get to grips with. Yeah. Early on, which is a problem. And if I hadn't been reading it for this, I think I probably would have put it down.
Yeah, I felt the same way. It's not a book for those who like a good plot. Mm. It's not a book for those who like action, because nothing really happens. I mean, just to briefly go back on the plot of the book, is a young orphan, Portia Quain. Both her parents have died. She goes to live with her stepbrother and his wife in London. And previous to that, she's been travelling around Europe, from what I can understand, with her parents.
Living in hotels.
Living in hotels in a quite bizarre sort of itinerant lifestyle. And she goes to live in a quite wealthy home in London with Thomas and Anna, who are her stepbrother and his wife. I have to say, she doesn't really get on too well there. She encounters a young chap called Eddie, who's a friend of the family, and falls madly in love with him. And sort of a little bit of action happens after that, but not much else happens.
Now, did you read it or did you listen to it, Marley?
I read it, yeah.
Okay. When I was listening to it, I felt that if I'd been reading it in a book, I might have fared better. Also, it was read by someone who... She read well, she had a very clear voice, but she had quite an irritating voice. And that, combined with the slightly irritating narrative style, really rubbed me up the wrong way. And I felt that I probably would have done better if I had read it. But perhaps not, because you didn't have a particularly good experience. Okay.
I like to say, yes, it was a better experience reading it, but not really. I found it quite tiring. Mm. Every action was analysed and taken from several different standpoints. And I felt myself saying, get to the point.
Yeah, get on with it.
Move on, please, move on. Which is a shame, because it isn't a badly written book.
No,
in fact,
no.
It's very well written. Let's hear a passage from the book which illustrates our points on verbosity and wordiness, I hope.
Portia could see it going on everywhere. She had watched life since she came to London with a sort of despair, motivated and busy always, always progressing. Even people pausing on bridges seemed to pause with a purpose. No bird seemed to pursue a quite aimless flight. The spring of the work seemed unfound only by her. She could not doubt people knew what they were doing. Everywhere she met alert, cognizant eyes. She couldn't believe there was not a plan of the whole setup in every head but her own. Accordingly, so anxious was her research that every look, every moment, every object had a quite political seriousness for her. Nothing was not weighed down by significance. In her home life, her new home life, with its puzzles, she saw dissimulation always on guard. She asked herself humbly for what reason people said what they did not mean and did not say what they meant. She felt most certain to find the clue when she felt the frenzy behind the clever remark. Outdoors, the pattern was less involuted, very much simplified. She enjoyed being in the streets. Unguarded smiles from strangers, the permitted frown of someone walking alone. Lovers' looks, as though they had solved something. And the unsolitary air with which the old or the wretched seemed to carry sorrow made her feel that people at least knew each other, if they did not yet know her, if she did not yet know them. The closeness she felt to Eddie since this morning, that closeness one most often feels in a dream, was a closeness to life she had only felt so far when she got a smile from a stranger across a bus. It seemed to her that while people were very happy, individual persons were surely damned. So she shrank from that specious mystery the individual throws about himself, from Anna's smiles, from Lillian's tomorrows, from the shut-in room, the turned-in heart.
I think from what I've read about Elizabeth Bowen, she was obsessed with the idea of the English veneer and what was happening underneath it and behind closed doors. So I suppose gossiping would reflect that obsession. But, yeah, I think that underpins a whole book, doesn't it? People's views on other people and, like, Anna appearing to be very nice but actually not being particularly pleasant to Portia.
No, quite awful, really.
And is it worth mentioning here that Elizabeth Bowen herself was an orphan and had been passed between various relatives?
Yes, I think that's probably relevant to them, because that could explain how Portia felt, in the sense that she felt like a parcel that had been pushed to one member of the family to another. And it's also fair to say that neither Anna or Thomas, the two people she ends up with, want her there.
No.
In fact, they're quite mean about her. She's quite resentful of the fact that this girl has been foisted on them. And Thomas seems to, as his half-sister, he's not very nice to her either.
So not
she's,
really.
She's this orphan that's arrived, as you say, unwanted. So I guess we should really touch upon the Portia and Eddie part of the story, because obviously that's the main driver of the whole narrative, the fact that she falls in love with the first guy that takes interest in her, and he's totally and thoroughly unsuitable. He sort of plays with her emotions and seems to flirt with all the women around him.
Yes, and he's so full of himself, isn't he? Oh. You want this, but I can't give you my whole self. I can only give you this bit. And he invites her round to his flat for tea, saying that he does this quite a lot with women because it's cheaper than taking them out. And then he messes about acting out some of the characters of these women, one of which is Anna. He's a cad, really, isn't he?
Absolute cad. He's either mocking other people or he's sort of toying with Portia's emotions. Mm. And curiously, she falls head over heels in love with him. And here's an excerpt from the book which I think belies Eddie's true character.
No, I think you're very good-looking too. Well, I am, you see, and I've got all this charm, and I can excite people. They don't really notice my brain. They're always insulting me. Everyone hates my brain because I don't sell that. That's the underground reason why everyone hates me. I sometimes hate it myself. I wouldn't be with these pigs if I hadn't first been so clever. Last time I went home, do you know, Portia, my younger brother laughed at my soft hands. While she ate, Eddie studied her gleamingly. He said, "You've got a goofy but inspired face. Understanding just washes over it. Why am I ever with anybody but you? Whenever I talk to other people, they jeer in their minds and think I am being dramatic. Well, I am dramatic. Why not? I am dramatic. The whole of Shakespeare is about me. All the others, of course, feel that too, which is why they're all dead nuts on Shakespeare. But because I show it when they haven't got the nerve to, they all jump on me. Blast their silly faces." While she ate, she kept her eyes on his forehead, at present tense with high feeling, but ventured to say nothing. Her meticulous observation of him made her like somebody at a play in a foreign language, of which they know not one word. The action has to be followed as closely as one can. Just a shade unnerved by her look, he broke off and said, "Do I ever bore you, darling?"
Thomas and Anna go abroad for the summer and just leave her there. So they send her to the seaside to stay with
Mrs. Peckham.
Yes, and Portia picks up a little set, doesn't she? And at one point, she invites Eddie to come and stay for the weekend.
That's right, yes, she does. So Eddie turns up. I think Mrs. Heckham has a daughter called Daphne a son called Dicky, and they all go to the cinema, all the, I think Daphne, Dicky, Portia and Eddie. And someone lights a cigarette, and as the cigarette's been lit, the light is flaring. Portia notices that Eddie is holding hands with Daphne, and it's like a devastating blow to her because she can see that he's quite the flirt, and he'd come to see her, but is then sort of holding hands with another girl. So, yeah, it's hard to see why she does like him, really.
The other thing was, like, he said, "Don't ever write about me in your diary." I mean, how dare he say that? That's her way of working through that inner turmoil. And he likes her to read the diary to him. And then it becomes apparent that Anna has been reading the diary. Yes. And doesn't seem to be particularly repentant about it.
No, and obviously that's a huge blow to Portia as well, because she's kept this secret diary, like a lot of teenagers do, with her thoughts and her feelings about things. And her privacy's been invaded, basically. Mm. Anna has discovered this diary. She shouldn't have been poking around the room, but she does. And Portia's mortified because obviously she's written about Anna in it and other people.
I wonder also whether she was thinking about marriage and the success of relationships. She had a slightly odd marriage. Apparently it was unconsummated.
Yes.
But they stay together all their life. But she had a lot of affairs, including one with a much younger man that went on for about 30 years. And I wondered if there was an implication that Anna was sleeping with Eddie.
Yes.
Who was younger than her. I don't know what
it's hinted at in the book, isn't it? Anna's certainly very interested in Eddie.
Mm.
She gets him a job at Thomas's company, advertising agency. there's definitely some sort of relationship there, and it's very, it is hinted. And I think at one point Eddie does say, refers to Anna as someone more than a friend.
Or maybe she fancied Eddie, and he obviously had a lot of people to choose from and kind of kept her dangling.
Yeah.
Treated her a bit as a toy. I don't know. But yeah, she had an unusual marriage.
So we normally at this stage do our three reasons for listening to the novel. And I suppose we should still do that. However, with provisos, and I think because maybe you and I didn't particularly enjoy it, it's not to say that our listeners might not.
Yeah, exactly.
If you like a book that's very intense, very detailed, very sort of engrossed in individual thoughts, then this is a great book.
And it's short. Well, I mean, it felt quite long.
It felt much longer to me.
But if that had been a 16-hour book to listen to, I definitely would have given up. But I kept thinking, well, it's only 8 hours. So it's a relatively brief hit of a certain style of writing that did not appeal to us, but might appeal to the readers. Yeah.
I read a review that said you had to buy into it. You had to get into the zone to read it. It's kind of Marmite. You either really loved it and got engrossed in it, or you didn't, and you didn't like it so much. And I can't say I hated the book, because that's a really strong word, but I didn't enjoy it.
I was at a Moorfields hospital appointment, and as many of our listeners know, there's a fair amount of waiting around there. So I had a 3-4 hour stretch just to listen to that book. But I'm afraid I wasn't really intrigued. I felt pity for Portia, certainly. It's so frustrating that there isn't really a resolution.
No, it kind of bobs along. And you think normally when you read a novel, you'll get to the end and then there'll be a kind of revelation, or the loose ends will be tied up, or something will happen. And there isn't any resolution. We're left hanging completely, which is symptomatic of the whole book. You don't really know what's going on throughout.
But in her defence, yes, that's what happens in real life.
That's true. That's
and
very
if,
true.
And if I compare it to a playwright, it would probably be like Chekhov.
Yes.
And I love Chekhov, and I've been in Chekhov. And
yes,
God bless him, nothing really happens in his plays.
Yeah.
But it's all people talking. Yeah. And the difference is, I think what makes Chekhov an amazing writer is his characterisation. And I think that's what this book lacks. I don't feel that the characters were strong enough, were compelling enough, at least for me, to justify sitting through this very tedious narrative.
Yeah, I mean, they were all completely dislikable. I've read lots of novels where you don't like the main characters.
But that doesn't necessarily
matter. No, it
doesn't
mean you don't enjoy it. No, absolutely not. And I think there's lots of quite awful characters in books, but you want to know what happens to them despite that.
Or even if they make bad choices, you understand why they made those choices. Or maybe there are other characters that you like, or the situation, or the plot. So no, I don't think it's necessary to really like your main character, but I think they have to be plausible.
I think the worst thing you can be about is indifferent, and I was indifferent about the characters. I didn't really care what really happened to them. Again, Portia was probably the only one you had any sympathy with as a 16-year-old teenager. You really do have to invest in the book in order to get through, I think, was it 7.5 hours in terms of the audiobook?
Yes, slightly quicker for me, because about halfway through I lost the will to live and I put it on 1.75 speed. So that helped a little bit, so it went past a little quicker.
That's a sad indictment of the book. As you say, it's not for everybody, but then literature isn't. And that's the great joy of literature, that it's each to their own and it's very subjective. So we didn't particularly like this novel, but many will.
Thanks to Debbie Heath here once again. Just as a reminder, Calibre Audio offer a completely free access to a wide range of audio books. For further info, you can get in touch by phoning 01296 432 339 or emailing inquiries@calibre.org.uk.